Seekers. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, glad you can make it. Seriously, you could be doing all kinds of things except listening to this program. So, so thank you, I guess, right? Hey, listen, I think there should be periodic mental exams for anybody and everybody who works at Fox News, the Rupert Murdoch terror broadcast organization. We make jokes about it. Everybody makes jokes about it. Everybody in the rest of media makes jokes about the crazy people over at Fox. I mean, they just are. It's just, I don't know. It's hard to explain, but you know what we're talking about here. Well, the latest, several weeks ago, a guy named Dan Gaynor of the Media Research Center, that's one of these neo-fascist organizations that constantly keep an eye on the liberal media, you know. He was on a Fox business program hosted by Eric Bolling. And Dan Gaynor of the Conservative Media Research Center told Eric Bolling on Fox that the Muppets, the new movie starring Kermit the Frog and Miss Piggy, that the movie has a liberal agenda. Gaynor said, he's the conservative, he's with the Conservative Media Research Center. Gaynor said, "It's amazing how far the left will go to manipulate your kids to give them the anti-corporate message." Gaynor went on to say that Hollywood is trying to brainwash kids. Now, Bolling, the Fox Business host, later kind of, sort of, tried to apologize for this kind of drivel. But no need to apologize. No need whatsoever, Eric. You're nuts. Dan Gaynor is a complete moron. And everybody that works at Fox News, you're out of your minds. But here's the plot. The villain in this film is an oil baron named Tex Richmond, played by Chris Cooper. Chris Cooper's a great character actor, right? And Tex Richmond wants to destroy the Muppet Studios in order to dig for oil. The stars of this movie, and thanks to Mike Krumbholz at the Upshot for this, the stars of the movie, Kermit and Miss Piggy, recently responded to these accusations, as Forbes reports, at a press conference in the UK for the movie's premiere. A reporter asked Kermit how he felt about the charge that the film is dangerous. Kermit responded, "Oh, it's so dangerous. No, it's a funny thing. They were concerned about us having some prejudice against oil companies, and I can tell you that's categorically not true. And besides, if we have problems with oil companies, why would we have spent the entire film driving around in a gas-guzzling Rolls Royce?" And following Kermit's comments, Miss Piggy chimed in, "It's almost as laughable as accusing Fox News of, you know, being news." Kermit then said, "Boy, that's going to be all over the internet." Good call, Kermit, as Mike Krumbholz says. Good call. Remember when one of these crazy right-wing Christian freaks tried to tell us that one of the what was that cartoon that Molly used to watch with the no the creatures that never talked. Teletubbies. God, that seems like a million years ago. Teletubbies. And who was it? Was it Falwell who said that Tinky Winky was queery weary, right? He had a what? He had a... Oh, my God.
Well, Tinky Winky.
No, a different channel there so people can hear you. Doo-dee-doo. We're waiting for Kathy to find the right button so she can talk so everyone can hear her. Try that one.
Can you hear me now?
There we go.
Tinky Winky was obviously gay because first he was lavender.
Yeah.
He had a little triangle on his antenna.
Right.
They all had, one was a curly Q and, you know, another was a circle, but his was a lambda, so he had to be queer.
Right.
And he had a little purse. And one of them kept spilling pudding on the other one or something, and I don't know if that had anything to do with homosexuality, but probably according to Falwell, but Tinky Winky was obviously...
So what do you think of Miss Piggy and Kermit, Kathy, being accused of having a liberal agenda?
I just think everyone should go see Avenue Q and take it from there. Yeah, of course they're liberal. Jim Henson was liberal. He's dead, but I'm sure they're still paying homage to it. But yeah, so I mean, I'm trying to understand the controversy here.
I know. Oh well, I just thought I'd throw that in. You can throw it right back out. We've been talking about how the National Football League Players Association had. Voiced its opinion. It took out a full-page ad in the New York Times a couple of weeks ago. Voiced its opinion about the state of Indiana deciding to go so-called right to work. Of course, right to work has nothing to do with right to work. It's right to be poor, right to not have a job, right to not have decent wages. But the meme, just like the people who believe that a privacy between a woman and her physician should be just that, privacy, rather than a choice. Whoever came up with a woman's right to choose made a grave error. It's a woman's right to have her medical decisions made in private between she and her doctor. But I digress. The so-called right to work garbage in Indiana is happening. This bill is going to be passed and signed by the governor right before or shortly after the Super Bowl. And Dave Zinn of The Nation had an interview with DeMaurice Smith, head of the NFL Players Association, and it hit the internet's. I guess a couple of days ago, and Greg in Indiana sent this in to me. And I just want to share with you part of the interview. But before I get to that, Super Bowl is supposed to bring attention and glory to its host city, right? Every city wants the Super Bowl. And as Dave Zinn writes, thanks to an anti-worker, anti-union assault by Indiana's Governor Mitch Daniels and the Republicans, the big game to be held this year in Indianapolis is bringing a different kind of attention altogether. The NFL Players Association joined ranks of unions across the state last week in opposing efforts to make Indiana join the ranks of the so-called right to work for less states. Right to work laws have been also called right to beg or the right to starve since they undercut wages, benefits, and the most basic workplace protections. You know, like workplace safety and stuff like that. Now, this the stance taken by the Players Association comes after their own labor battles, and they released a statement where they promised that they would not be silent on these laws during the build-up to the Super Bowl. So Dave Zinn interviewed NFLPA Executive Director DeMaurice Smith about why they felt it was important to take a stand against this legislation. And I have a little bit of that for you when we come back after this break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
And nation, I've learned to take every view. You know, I've memorized Lerner and Golden. I feel like I'm almost a Jew. But when it comes to times like Korea, there's no one more red, white, and blue. So love me, love me, love me. I'm a liberal. I vote for the Democratic Party. They want the UN to be strong. I attend all the Pete Seeger concerts. He sure gets me singing those songs. And I'll send all the money you ask for, but don't ask me to come on along. So love me, love me, love me.
It's Mike Malone.
Past the hour. This hour is being sponsored by Valerie Schmidt. I guess I can say his last name, right? Bell. He has a message. Interesting message. Listen to this. He says, I joined Osa Mountain Village, a real sustainable, eco-friendly community of truth seekers in Costa Rica. Please go to OMV Costa Rica.info to find out why. And Val says, all my IRA 401k savings are now in Costa Rica. The Wall Street Mafia will never steal one more cent of my retirement money. Free at last.
Thank you, Valerie. I just have to say, Valerie is probably one of the nicest people I have ever met in my entire life. And I mean that in a nice way, because some nice people are just really annoying. But Valerie, they are. Well, Valerie and his wife are wonderful people.
Yeah.
So, extra cookies for you, Valerie. Oh, and on that line, just real quick, and I'll shut up. But if you've sponsored an hour of the Malloy Show, we'd like to make an honest brownie out of Molly. She has promised you a box of cookies, but we can't get you the cookies if you don't give us your mailing address. So please, please, please. And if you say, I'm diabetic, I don't want cookies, I don't eat cookies, surely you have a friend or a relative who would like the cookies. So please, I don't want a basement full of cookies. There are a number of reasons why I don't want a basement full of cookies.
Okay.
Not the least of which is I'd like
rats
to still fit into some of my pants.
All right, listen.
So please give me a mailing address. Even if you don't sponsor an hour, I'm gonna get to the point where I'm gonna say, hey, if you just smile at me every once in a while, I'll send you some cookies.
You're starting to sound like a troop leader. Oh, my God. All right. Anyway, Val, thank you for the sponsorship and a very intriguing message. Go to omvcostarica.info. Didn't Val used to live in Canada? I think he did. I don't know. It doesn't matter. Anyway, thanks for the sponsorship, Val. Now, back to this interview conducted by Dave Zinn for The Nation magazine. Zinn asked DeMaurice Smith, the head of the NFL Players Union, why did the NFLPA feel compelled to release that statement against Indiana's proposed right-to-work laws? DeMaurice Smith answers, first and foremost, it's important that our young men understand that they are just like every other man and woman in America who works for a living. The minute that any sports player believes, for whatever reason, that they are outside the management labor paradigm, I guarantee you that the minute you start thinking that way is the day you will start to lose ground. Our guys get their fingers broken, their backs broken, their heads concussed, and their knees torn up because they actually put their hands into the ground and work for a living. And I would much rather have them understand and appreciate and, frankly, embrace the beauty of what it is to work and provide for their families. On this issue, DeMaurice Smith goes on, we are in lockstep with organized labor. I'm proud to sit on the executive council of the AFL-CIO. Why? Because we share all the same issues that the American people share. We want decent wages. We want a fair pension. We want to be taken care of when we get hurt. We want a decent and safe working environment. So when you look at proposed legislation in a place like Indiana that wants to call it something like right to work, I mean, let's just put the hammer on the nail. It's untrue. The bill has nothing to do with a right to work. If folks in Indiana and that great legislature want to pass a bill that really is something called right to work, then have a state constitutional amendment that guarantees every citizen a job. That's a right to work. What this is instead is a right to ensure that ordinary working citizens can't get together as a team, can't organize, can't stand together, and can't fight management on an even playing field. From a sports union, our men and their families understand the power of management and understand how much power management can wield over an individual person. So don't call it a right to work. If you want to have an intelligent discussion about what the bill is, call it what it is. call it an anti-organizing bill. Fine. If that's what people want to do in order to put a bill out there, let's cast a vote on whether or not ordinary citizens can get together and represent themselves. And let's have a real referendum. Woo! Powerful words from the head of the NFL Players Association, Demorey Smith. Now, when we come back after this break, this is a lengthy interview, but I just have two more questions from Dave Zinn and two more answers from Demorey Smith regarding the Super Bowl game in Indianapolis. What is it? It's Sunday week? This Sunday coming? The 5th? Oh, okay. Who'd have thunk it? All right, stick around. We have more of this when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Uncle Mikey has another bedtime story. Back to Mike Malloy.
This hour is sponsored by Val Schmidt. He's got a message. He says, I joined Osa Mountain Village, a real sustainable, eco-friendly community of truth seekers in Costa Rica. Please go to omvcostarica.info to find out why. All my IRA 401k savings are now in Costa Rica. The Wall Street Mafia will never steal one more cent of my retirement money. Free at last. Thanks, Val. All right, Dave Zinn, Nation Magazine, interviews Demorey Smith, head of the NFL Players Union. Just two more questions, two more answers regarding this right-to-work so-called law that has been passed now in Indiana and either has been signed by the rancid Republican governor there, Mitch Daniels, or is about to be signed. Anyway, Dave Zinn says, the news this week was that this bill was rammed through committee, so it is advancing through the Indiana State House. Now, this obviously, this interview was conducted before it was passed by the State House. But Dave goes on, has there been any talk about what else the Players Association might do? Any follow-up to the statement that you put out? Demorey Smith. I wrote an op-ed that has been placed in the main Indianapolis newspaper. If the issue is still percolating by the time of Super Bowl, I can promise you that the players of the NFL and their union will be upfront about what we think about this and why. Look, we have players who played in Indianapolis, obviously, but I made no secret coming into this fight that the lockout, organized and implemented by a group of owners, he's talking about the NFL lockout, was not only designed to hurt players, but all of the people who work in and around our stadium, the hospitality network, the network of restaurants, bars, all those things that are connected and touch our business were affected by the lockout that we frankly did not want to happen. So there's never going to be a day where players are going to divorce themselves from the ordinary people who work around their sports, and we're sure as heck not going to divorce ourselves from the fans who dig our game. Dave Zinn. If the legislation is still percolating, there will be people who will be doing legal, nonviolent protests around the Super Bowl game to try to leverage the spotlight of the Super Bowl to raise the issue for a national audience. And I know that they're getting various union endorsements to do so. Is this something the National Football League Players Association would support? The idea of a demonstration, a legal, nonviolent demonstration outside the Super Bowl? Demorey Smith. Yeah, possibly. We've been on picket lines in Indianapolis already with hotel workers who were basically pushed to the point of breaking on the hotel rooms that they had to clean because they were not union workers. We've been on picket lines in Boston and San Antonio. So the idea of participating in a legal protest is something that we've done before. We'll have to see what is going to go on when we're there. But issues like this are incredibly important to us. If we can be in a position just to make sure that we raise the level of the debate to the point where it is a fair and balanced discussion about the issues, I think that's something that our players can help do. Obviously, players have a very high profile, and I think it's important for them to take on issues which are important to them and be in a position to talk about them, raise the level of consciousness about them. If we do one thing by making this statement, and it is raising the level of the debate, and to have real people ask real questions about it, well, we've served our purpose. Dave Zinn of The Nation interviewing DeMaurice Smith, head of the NFL Players Union. We'll find out what's going to happen this Sunday. I've said before, of course, it's easy for me to say, I'm not a professional football player by any means. But, you know, you can talk the talk until hell freezes over. Have you got the gall, the guts, the nerve to walk the walk? Now, some people will argue, well, Malloy, you can't expect the players not to play football on Super Sunday. If you did, then there would be this mighty backlash in the United States. Oh, my God, they took away our Super Bowl. In order to what? Make a point about unions? Hell, only 7% of a private workforce in America is union. What's the issue here, boys? Was there that much screaming when the basketball players were locked out? When football players have been locked out? A lot of grumbling, but was there screaming? Can you imagine what would happen on so-called Super Bowl Sunday in this former republic called the United States of America if these two teams did not get out there and play football? Can you imagine what would happen if these two teams would take the field and in solidarity with unionized workers, public and private, all across the country, if rather than participating, they just stood there? Until finally, one of them, DeMaurice Smith, maybe, went to the middle of the field and asked the referee for a microphone and made a statement, made an actual honest-to-God statement. And then when the group of morons in Indianapolis booed DeMaurice Smith for making the statement, DeMaurice Smith could walk off the field, give a signal, and the players would go back to the dressing room until the clowns and asswipes stopped booing. You think? You think something like that could happen? I mean, man, we're talking about the Super Bowl here, right? I mean, this is not some cheesy little thing like the occupation of Afghanistan or the invasion of Iraq. I mean, you know, I'm just, this is the Super Bowl. Okay, never mind. Never mind. Now, Greg in Indiana also sent me something else from Indiana. A judge, Greg sent that to me, but there's this. Indiana school voucher law has been upheld as being constitutional. A judge upheld the school voucher law last Friday, rejecting the arguments that the largest program in the nation unconstitutionally uses public money to support religion. Well, of course it does. A Superior Court judge said the school choice scholarship program doesn't violate the state constitution because the state isn't directly funding parochial schools. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Instead, the program gives scholarship vouchers to parents who can choose where to use them. What kind of schools do you think are available in the state of Indiana other than the public schools? 3, 2, 1. That's right. Parochial schools. So there's your choice. About 4,000 children are enrolled in Indiana school voucher program. That makes it the nation's largest, okay? Now, the Indiana State Teachers Association President Nate Schnellenberger said that they're going to keep fighting this law. The union had backed the lawsuit brought by teachers and religious leaders. religious leaders. How about that? He told the Associated Press, Schnellenberger did, quote, the ruling from the judge does not shake our confidence and it will be appealed, end quote. Officials with some phony-ass organization called the Institute for Justice, which represented two parents who wanted to use the vouchers, said they believe the ruling would stand. Institute for Justice. We are the Institute for Justice, all both of us. The Institute for Justice said today's ruling is a resounding win for Indiana parents and students, and it is a major defeat for school choice opponents. Choice. School choice. Do you want your child to go to a filthy, rotten, underperforming public school or this nice, Christian, well-staffed school so they can learn the truth about evolution? They can learn the truth about science and astronomy. They can reestablish the fact that everything revolves around the earth. It just doesn't stop. So Greg sent both of these in. You have Indiana with their god-awful school voucher program that will funnel money out of the public tax fund to fund the private schools. And you now have the so-called right-to-work law that is anything but. And in the meantime, of course, the Christian crazy people continue to scream, the fundamentalist right continue to scream that they are being denied their rights by legislation like, when federal money is to be withheld from religious organizations that discriminate against gay people. Then they scream until their goddamn noses bleed, don't they? Oh, discrimination, discrimination, discrimination. But the real agenda is to keep grinding along the combination of church and state, the combination of church and state in legal matters, in educational matters, just about everything. Combination of church and state, the military. You know, they didn't name the song Onward Christian Soldiers for nothing.
I don't need security. I've got a Colt 45 in here with me. I'll scare off intruders in my fatigues, black jacket, and army boots. My neck is red, my collar blue. I like it that way. I don't hear liberals talking to me. I don't see things their way.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's Mike Malloy.
With every breath. With every breath. 10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Val Schmidt. Thank you, Val. He has a message for anyone who wants to check this out. This is worth checking out. He says, I joined Osa Mountain Village, a real sustainable, eco-friendly community of truth seekers in Costa Rica. Please go to omvcostarica.info. to find out why. All my IRA 401k savings are now in Costa Rica. The Wall Street Mafia will never steal one more cent of my retirement money. Free at last. Woo! All right, Val. Thank you, sir. Appreciate the sponsorship. I got a very interesting email today asking a question. Well, I'll tell you what, let's do that next hour. The question is what happened to Canada. But let's go to Prairie 2. I got this from Prairie 2 last week, never got to it. Here's what he writes. Capitalism shouldn't be confused with business or anything else that's good for you. Simply put, capitalism is the buying and selling of someone else's business, whether it's the looting of companies by the leveraged buyout specialists at Bain Capital or the monopolization of a particular commodity by the likes of Enron. A capitalist, by definition, does not create, does not produce, does not contribute to anything but his or her own bottom line. Capitalism is about the use of capital to one's own advantage while taking what other people have produced and nothing else. It's not about workers versus employers, except that capitalism demands the exploitation of workers because there's profit to be had there. That's not different from the profits made in war or any natural disaster when capitalists are allowed to take advantage of the situation. Capitalism shouldn't be confused with investing, which takes place when a person takes ownership of some part of an ongoing business. Investing, in turn, should not be confused with playing the market. Remember when it used to be called that? Instead of your retirement security? The stock market doesn't produce anything new, either, with the exception of a few winners and lots of losers. And this is just like playing at any other mafia-run casino. The Wall Street Mafia does well for itself, but serves no public good. Any exception to this rule could be better achieved by someone else. Let's review. A business that actually produces something of value is, by definition, not capitalism, and its investors are not capitalists. The exception is that some businesses in an unregulated economy do behave as capitalists by preying upon their weaker competitors or preying upon the public in general while operating a legitimate front business. Americans all think they are capitalists, having had it drilled into them for generations that capitalism is the polar opposite of communism and that no good American is a communist. All the while, fewer and fewer Americans own anything themselves. They don't realize they are charging at full speed toward living in the exact image of a communist state where the individual owns nothing, only without the veneer of socialism. Mitt Romney recently found out just how little regard Americans actually have for capitalists. Republican voters have now switched to Newt Gingrich after he pointed out just how despicable capitalists are. In South Carolina, Mitt only won the demographic of those with an income over $200,000 per year. Historically, communism, as it has been practiced, was really indistinguishable from capitalism. The Red Chinese were able to convert to capitalism without changing much of anything. And they're about to announce a new five-year plan that will make them the dominant capitalist power on Earth. The Soviet elite converted to capitalism by simply doing away with their social safety nets and becoming capitalist oligarchs. American capitalism is moving the country as fast as it can to becoming a hybrid of the Soviet, Russian oligarch, and Chinese models. From the Soviet system, the total domination of business by gigantic, centrally planned corporations. Welcome to Walmart, I am Comrade Greeter. From the modern Russian oligarchic model, the total elimination of social safety nets of any kind. And from the Red Chinese model, a national security state. The Republican base hasn't caught on that Newt is more than happy to wield the axe to people like Mitt, as long as Newt gets to wear the crown in public. If Americans in general catch on that the Occupy movement is onto something, thanks to the revelations of Newt Gingrich, they should build him a statue or name a prison after him. Prairienumeral2.com. You can read Bruce now, Prairie 2, at tvnewslies.org. Is it .org? Yeah, tvnewslies.org on the editorial section of that website. Prairie 2 is now published there. How about that? Yes, but all American. You know, how many times have you listened when I take phone calls to people call in and they want to challenge me? You know, because they think they are capitalists. They think they, these callers, understand that capitalism is this bastion against communism, not realizing that capitalism is slowly turning them into a serf. I grieve for my fellow countrymen. I really do. Not from a position of arrogance or, gee, I know things and you don't, but from a position that I took time to do some reading, some studying, some dissecting of what we call capitalism, and found out that it's an absolute fraud, an absolute lie. And the people that it's hurting are people like me and you. We'll be back after the break. What happened to Canada? This hour is being sponsored by Anonymous. Anonymous. His message. Apple's 21st century Chinese Foxconn factory is disgustingly predicted in this 1927 silent movie, Metropolis. On a lighter note, I look forward to enjoying Molly's yummy tagalongs, but if they're gone, I'll take Samoa's. Thanks for telling it like it is. Thank you, Anonymous.
Thank you, Anonymous, for actually giving me your address so we can mail you those cookies. Yes. Thank you.
All right. What happened to Canada? You know, we Americans are very arrogant where it concerns Canadians. And we're not aware of that because the arrogance pops into our own heads. Canadians are aware of it. I don't think Canadians are arrogant about their position with Americans. I think they pity us a little bit. But when's the last time you thought about Canada except to make some snide remark? Well, Chris Hedges was recently in Montreal. And as he writes, you know, what happened to Canada, he points out it used to be the country we would flee to if life in the United States became unpalatable. If you go to Canada, there's no nuclear weapons, there's no huge military industrial complex, there's universal health care, there's funding for the arts, there's a good record on the environment. That's the way it used to be. That was the old Canada. Uh-oh. Hedges says, I was in Montreal on Friday and Saturday, just passed, and saw the familiar and disturbing tentacles of the security and surveillance state. Canada has withdrawn from the Kyoto Accord so it can dig up the Alberta tar sands in an orgy of environmental degradation. It carried out the largest mass arrests of demonstrators in Canadian history, at 2010's G8 and G20 meetings, rounding up more than 1,000 people. It sends undercover police into indigenous communities and activist groups and is handing out stiff prison terms to dissenters. And Canada's Prime Minister, Stephen Harper, is a diminished version of George W. Bush. He champions the rabid right wing in Israel, bows to the whims of global financiers, and is a Christian fundamentalist. Oh, my goodness. Oh, Canada. See, it's a shame. I digress from what Hedges wrote. It's a shame because Canadians and Americans, I don't mean to be insulting to Canadians, but damn, there's not a lot of difference in generally speaking. Now, don't, if you're Canadian, don't take offense at that. You know what I mean? In our appearances, we are many races in this country. We are many races in Canada. We're many immigrants in Canada, many immigrants here. Yada, yada, yada. Economic system is kind of the same. A governing system is different, parliamentarian, as opposed to whatever the hell it is we have here, a totally corrupt, bought and paid for system now owned by corporate America. But you know, I mean, I was a kid growing up in Toledo, Ohio. Canada was pretty exotic. And you know what made Canadians exotic? Not the way they looked or dressed or talked. They looked what dressed and talked just like Americans. Excuse me, I'm sorry. It was their cars. A Canadian Ford was just a little bit different from an American Ford. I can remember, like, going to school, walking down the street, and a car would go by, because we were only 50 miles from Canada, from Ontario. A car would go by. And, you know, we boys would look at it. What is that? Oh, no, it looks like a Chevy. No, it's not a Chevy. It's a Ford. What? Yeah. You know, it'd be a car made in Canada. That was then, and this is now. Chris Hedges says the voices of dissent in Canada sound like our own, and the forms of persecution are familiar. This is not an accident. We are fighting the same corporate leviathan. Canadian activist Leah Henderson wrote to fellow dissidents before being sent to Vanier Prison in Milton, Ontario, to serve a 10-month sentence. This is what Leah Henderson wrote, quote, "I want to tell you that I was arrested because I am seen as a threat. I want to tell you that you might be too. I want to tell you that this is something we need to prepare for. I want to tell you that the risk of incarceration alone should not determine our organizing." She went on to say, "My skills and experience as a facilitator, as a trainer, as a legal professional, and as someone linking different communities and movements were all targeted in this case. With the state trying to depict me as a brainwasher, and as a mastermind of mayhem, violence, and destruction. During the week of the G8 and G20 summits, the police targeted legal observers, street medics, and independent media. It is clear that the skills that make us strong, the alternatives that reduce our reliance on their systems and prefigure a new world, are the very things that they are most afraid of." End quote. Leah Henderson, Canadian activist, toiler for human rights. As Hedges points out, the decay of Canada illustrates two things. Corporate power is global, and resistance to it cannot be restricted by national boundaries. And there's a reason for that. Corporations have no regard for nation states. They don't give a damn. Capital is capital. It flows anywhere. It causes upheavals, upends nations, destroys local currencies, sends people into abject poverty, takes their houses, burns their factories and fields. Capitalism doesn't give a tinker's damn about borders, boundaries, nation states, please. As Hedges says, they assert their power to exploit the land and the people everywhere. They play worker off of worker and nation off of nation. They control the political elites in Ottawa as they do in London, Paris, and Washington. This is why the tactics to crush the Occupy movement around the globe have an eerie similarity infiltration, surveillance, denial of public assembly, physical attempts to eradicate encampments, the use of propaganda and the press to demonize the movement, new draconian laws stripping citizens of basic rights, and increasingly harsh terms of incarceration. Sound familiar, Truth Seeker? Oh, Canada. And then Hedges writes about Canada's Minister of Natural Resources, a guy named Joe Oliver, responding to the growing opposition to the Keystone XL pipeline and the Northern Gateway pipelines. And this guy, Joe Oliver, wrote in an open letter that, quote, environmental and other radical groups are trying to hijack our regulatory system to achieve their radical ideological agenda, end quote. My God, that sounds like somebody on Fox, Rupert Murdoch's terror network, doesn't it? Huh? Listen to that guy. Canada's Minister of Natural Resources accused pipeline opponents of receiving funding from foreign special interest groups. And he said that, quote, if all other avenues have failed, they will take quintessential American approach. Sue everyone and anyone to delay the project even further, end quote. Now, it doesn't matter that in both Canada and the United States, suing the government to seek redress is the right of every citizen. Apparently not according to Canada's Minister of Natural Resources, Joe Oliver. And no matter that the opposition to the Keystone XL and the Northern Gateway pipelines has its roots in Canada, no matter that the effort by citizens in the U.S. and Canada to fight climate change is about self-preservation. Oh, Canada, what has happened? We'll be right back. When they took my only son from me, I saw it on TV. I know it's true.
Show, because each time you listen to right-wing radio, God kills a kitten.
Yeah, keep that in mind. 21 past the hour. Chris Hedges, what happened to Canada? It used to be the country we would flee to if life in the United States became unpalatable. Anyway, Hedges concludes. The Canada's Minister of Natural Resources, Joe Oliver, is in the pocket of the fossil fuel industry, just like the energy czars in most of the other industrialized nations. And this guy, what's his name? Joe Oliver, is trying to pit loyal Canadians against disloyal Canadians. You know, just like they do here. And as Hedges says, those with whom we will build this movement of resistance will not, in some cases, be our own. He's talking about doing away with political boundaries as we try to fight this struggle against corporatism, capitalism, call it what you want. He says they may speak Arabic, the people with whom we will build this movement. They may pray five times a day toward Mecca and be holding off the police thugs in the center of Cairo. Or they may be generously pierced and tattooed and speak Danish. Or they may be Mandarin-speaking workers battling China's totalitarian capitalism. These are differences that make no difference. G.K. Chesterton once wrote that my country, right or wrong, is on the same level as my mother, drunk or sober. Our most dangerous opponents, in fact, look and speak like us. They hijacked familiar and comforting iconography and slogans to paint themselves as true patriots. They claim to love Jesus, but they cynically serve the function a native bureaucracy serves for any foreign colonizer. The British and the French, the early Romans, were masters of this game. They recruited local Quislings to carry out policies and repression that were determined in London or Paris or Rome. They look and speak like us, Hedges writes. You know, the teabaggers stole, and the right-wingers stole. Stole. Books written by organizers like Saul Alinsky, how to resist the occupation of your mind by these capitalist pigs. They steal everything. They steal because there is not a Republican or a conservative in this country, or probably not in Canada either, with an ounce of creativity or original thought. Hedges says, global financiers are the new colonizers. They make the rules. They pull the strings. They offer the illusion of choice in our carnivals of political theater, but corporate power remains constant and unimpeded. Barack Obama serves the same role Herod did in Imperial Rome. This is why the Occupy Wall Street movement is important. It targets the center of power, global financial institutions. It deflects attention from the empty posturing in the legislative and executive offices in Washington or London or Paris, and I might add, or in Ottawa. The Occupy movement reminds us that until the corporate superstructure is dismantled, it does not matter which member of the native elite is elected or anointed to rule. In other words, Democrat, Republican, liberal, or conservative, labor, it doesn't make any difference what political party. They are all owned outright by the capitalists. Do you get that? I mean, to a lot of right-wingers, they don't care. That doesn't matter. It's like, oh, yeah, well, I'm going to be a capitalist too someday. No, you're not. Not ever. It just says the Canadian Prime Minister is as much a servant of corporate power as the American President. And replacing either will not alter corporate domination, which is what we've talked about so often on this program. The changing, I mean, a thief who wears blue jeans today and a tux tomorrow is still a thief. It doesn't make any difference. The system is so corrupt. It's got to be replaced. It cannot be reformed. Now, you're probably wondering, uh-oh, well, didn't Bobby Alexander flee from Seattle to Vancouver in order to get away from this? I don't mean flee because he was running like a coward. I mean flee because he couldn't take it anymore. He couldn't take the lies and the deceit. Like a lot of us, it just so happened that Bob had the wherewithal to make this that pronounced of a move. What's his take on this? Well, I sent him Hedges' column earlier today, and he responded. And I'll share that with you. When we come back, it's a very brief response, but I want you to hear it. Stick around. We'll be right back. We try to hustle and try to bust and try to cuss them. The cops want someone to bust down on Orleans Avenue. Another day, another dollar, another wall, another tower went up where the homeless had their home. Who will save your soul when it comes to the bell? 25 before the hour. All right, so what's Bob Alexander's take on what Chris Hedges had to say about Canada being just like the United States? So I sent this to him, and he wrote back, I know. Bob writes, I always knew we weren't going to perfect place. It remains to be seen what the Canadians will do when Harper tries some serious crap. People are getting pissed. How pissed will they get? I don't know. But at least they're talking about it here on the mainstream media. They don't run bright, shiny things as distractions on the nightly news. I'll send you a broadcast of the Canadian TV news on DVD. It's not a Gingrich, Romney, Rumpelstiltskin moment on local or national news. It's safe to watch, and after a couple of months of it, my skin cleared up. Bob. This hour is being sponsored by Anonymous. Well, he wishes to be anonymous, which is fine. We know who he is. And he has a message. Apple's 21st century Chinese Foxconn factory is disgustingly predicted in the 1927 silent movie Metropolis. On a lighter note, I look forward to enjoying Molly's yummy tagalongs, but if they're gone, I'll take Samoa's. And thanks for telling it like it is. Thank you, Anon. We appreciate it very much. The situation at airtime, as they say, at Occupy DC, is pretty much in flux. The threats are to evict the people at McPherson Square. That's where I went back October 9th. Remember the October9th.org? We talked about it last summer. And I got there on October 9th, and McPherson Square was being set up as a parallel Occupy occupation. And eventually, of course, Kevin Zeese and Dr. Margaret Flowers and the rest of the people who had organized the October 9th resistance merged with Occupy DC. And now they have been warned, there's an order from the National Park Service that campers have got to remove their gear or depart. The occupiers, one of them, quoted in the New York Times, said, quote, what they're doing with this enforcement is a joke. People need to have a place to stay, end quote. In other words, what the National Park Service is saying, that they have to, the occupiers have to get their tents and everything has to be hidden out of view. Now, despite the deadline, I think the deadline was 2 p.m. today, there was no immediate effort by the police. I don't know if that has held so far tonight. No effort by the police to clamp down on the campers. And Park Police also announced that they would begin enforcing the rules at another encampment, Freedom Plaza. Excuse me, I got them backwards. Freedom Plaza is the one I went to. That's where the October 9th movement began, Freedom Plaza. And McPherson Square was where Occupy set up. My bad. Now, there's no surprise about this warning. The National Park Service announced last week that it would begin enforcing the no camping restriction at the two parks noon today. So I'm not sure. In the meantime, over the weekend, I guess you're familiar or you know by now what happened in Oakland, California. So, the situation in Oakland, 400, 425, whatever, people were arrested. Three police officers were injured. There was an assault on City Hall. I'm not quite sure how to interpret this. The mainstream media, of course, presents it a certain way. The Oakland city administrator said, while City Hall sustained damage, we anticipate that all city offices will be open for regular business today. This was in a Sunday dispatch from Reuters. At a press conference yesterday, Oakland police said they did not have a final tally of arrests. Three officers and one demonstrator were injured. And of course, the protests in Oakland became a focal point after a former Marine and Iraq war veteran, Scott Olson, remember him, was critically injured during a demonstration back in October. He was hit in the head by a tear gas canister. So violence erupted, according to press reports, Saturday in Oakland when protesters attempted to take over the apparently empty downtown convention center to establish a new headquarters and draw attention to the problem of homelessness. Police in riot gear moved in to drive back the crowd. And the Oakland Police Department issued a statement saying officers were pelted with bottles, metal pipes, rocks, spray cans, improvised explosive devices, oh my God, and burning flares. And the Oakland Police Department deployed smoke, tear gas, and beanbag projectiles in response to this activity. And Sunday in D.C., police used a taser on an Occupy protester during an arrest at a park near the White House. Now, depending on where you get your information, you will have a certain take on what happened in Oakland. Some of the video that's out there shows what appears to be a violent activity on the part of the protesters. However, if you read other reports, people gathered for a protest march and they were fired on with these projectiles and tear gas canisters and so on and so forth. And the protesters became enraged. There were kids in the crowd. There were families out to peacefully demonstrate. So it depends on who you want to believe as to how you're going to assess what happened in Oakland on Saturday. The bottom line is that hundreds of people were arrested. And there was damage done to City Hall. You know, the hope is, and I think anyone who is the least bit responsible has been calling for nonviolence in these demonstrations. The violence is exactly what the people who own this country want. They want the violence. Because if there is violence, there's no contest. There's just no contest. The power has the weaponry. And they have the equipment, and they have the jails and the prisons, and they have the barbed wire, and they have the plastic handcuffs, and they have the truncheons, and they have the tear gas canisters, and they have the rubber-tipped bullets. What the protesters are supposed to have, and up to this point, for the most part, have had, is the moral authority that comes with peaceful resistance, peaceful nonviolence resistance, to fascism. I hope the Occupy movement does not allow itself, or even fringe members of the movement, or even people not associated with the movement who attach themselves. I don't know how you prevent that, but there has to be a way to separate the Occupy movement from violence. Unless the tactic now has changed to meet fire with fire. I hope it hasn't come to that. I really do. I hope that the Occupy movement is going to grow with the onset of warmer weather, spring and summer. I hope it's going to be massive. I hope it's going to be all-encompassing where it concerns what corporate America is doing. But I also hope it's going to remain nonviolent. We'll see, won't we? Huh? This hour has been sponsored by Anonymous, an anonymous message. Apple's 21st century Chinese Foxconn factory is disgustingly predicted in the 1927 silent movie Metropolis. On a lighter note, I look forward to enjoying Molly's yummy tagalongs, but if they're gone, I'll take Samoa's. Thanks for telling it like it is. Thanks, Anon. We appreciate it. A couple of emails here about what we've been talking about. From Bruce from Prairie 2, Stand Your Own Ground. He says, I think this piece on Canada, the one that Chris Hedges wrote, perfectly eliminates the position that I've had for a long time. There's no point in fleeing the U.S. for some sort of refuge. There is none, not on this planet. And Nuke controls the moon colonies. You have to stand and hold the ground you know best, even if the enemy looks just like you. We have fought this fight many times since the first Tea Party, the one with real patriots, since the first Tea Party stood up to the most powerful corporation that ever existed, the British East India Company. We can win this time, too, but we must not let our grandchildren forget this time. Yeah, good point. And from Jeanette, regarding violence in any way associated with the Occupy movement, Jeanette writes, the violence on the Occupy side could have been done by infiltrators. If not, they're going to lose support. Even if it was done by infiltrators, unless the occupiers root them out and publicize it, they will still lose support because the public won't know it was done by infiltrators. On the one hand, it's tragic that the violence is happening. On the other hand, it's kind of amazing that there haven't been more flare-ups. Remember, the powers want violence. From Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, the improvised explosive devices referred to in press reports were firecrackers. Firecrackers. And let's not forget, Michael writes, the greater the violence of the cops, the more likely agents provocateur were involved in the reaction. It's just the way things are done in this country. And Tim from L.A., Tim from L.A. writes, members and friends of mine of Occupy L.A. were arrested, and according to Livestream and Ustream, the police ordered the protesters to leave. The problem was the police blocked every possible exit, and more than 300 arrests were made. I watched friends from Occupy L.A. getting arrested, and one friend smiling as she was handcuffed. Now, these are people that went to Oakland for this. They were victims of smoke bombs, tear gas, which went back to the police because the winds changed direction. They were cattled and arrested. But before anyone starts yelling, F the police, I now know why the police are doing what they're doing and will pass the information, pass it on. As for the vandalism, if you're trapped like a mouse in the corner, you find a way out. Even if it means breaking a window of City Hall to get out or smash a patrol car so the police would run up and look at the damaged windshield. Panicking does not make one think too well. But what does one do? Surrender and get shot? Disperse and be arrested, and then there's no place to go. That's an old tactic. But to arrest 400 people, Tim says over 300. The press reports now are saying over 400. I hope, and I mean this sincerely, I hope accommodations can be made regarding these ongoing demonstrations because they're not going to stop. The Occupy movement is only going to grow. And I have a very sick feeling that as these demonstrations grow, as the date of the People's Congress convocation in D.C. approaches, and you can find out about this by going to peoplescongress.org, that capitalist America is going to start responding with escalating levels of violence. I have a sick feeling that there are going to be... the Occupy movement is not something that's going to go away. It's already established itself firmly in political campaigns of these right-wing freaks. It's established itself in the vocabulary now. How many people in the United States don't know what the terms 1% and 99% mean? And granted, that is primarily due to the fact that media have publicized this movement. At first, in a kind of smarmy, condescending way. But then all of a sudden, mainstream media started to realize, wait a second, this is not... This is not a bunch of long-haired hippies, to borrow a phrase from God's sake 40 years ago. You never notice how right-wingers still talk about long-haired hippies. I mean, that was 1965, you half-asses. This is 2012. Hippies! Oh, my God. But anyway, as this movement continues to move toward the ultimate goal, which is a replacement of the current system, not a reforming, but a replacement, whether it is the political system or financial system, if you can tell a difference between the two. But I just have a strong feeling that there are going to be incidents. All right, stick around. We have a break here. We'll be back for the final hour tonight of the Malloy program. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. back. It is 7 past the hour. You all know who Alan West is. I think he's the first African-American representative from Florida since the late 19th century, if I'm not mistaken. He is... He was at a dinner, the Lincoln Day dinner at West Palm Beach, a day or two ago, over the weekend, not sure. Anyway, when he was at a Lincoln Day dinner in West Palm Beach for the Palm Beach County Republican Party, so Representative Alan West, Republican of Florida, took the occasion to demonstrate yet again why the Republican Party is in the toilet. And people like Alan West are merely floating on the surface until someone comes along and flushes it. This is what he said, quote, "We need to let President Obama, Harry Reid, Nancy Pelosi," and at that point the audience booed, "and my dear friend, the chairman of the Democratic National Committee," that would be Wasserman Schultz, "we need to let them know that Florida ain't on the table." He went on, "Take your message of equality of achievement, take your message of economic dependency, take your message of enslaving the entrepreneurial will and spirit of the American people somewhere else. You can take it to Europe, you can take it to the bottom of the sea, you can take it to the North Pole, but get the hell out of the United States of America," end quote. First of all, he displays his monumental stupidity and ignorance and the fact that he is a fool with a message of economic dependency. Who's saying that? Pelosi? Reid? Obama? I mean, I'm not going to sit here and defend Democrats, national Democrats, at all until some goddamn clown like this fool stands up and talks about economic dependency. There's a message of economic dependency. It's you, you clown. Your party is, oh, never mind, enslaving the entrepreneurial will and spirit of the American people. Where did this scum come from? But on the other hand, I mean, welcome aboard, Alan. It's people like you and Newt and eventually Romney. You people are doing, and Fox, you people are doing exactly what you're supposed to do. You are utterly eviscerating, gutting, letting its insides spill all over the pavement of the Republican Party. Thank you. Oh, by the way, Alan West, he served in the United States Army for about 20 years. He rose to the rank of lieutenant colonel. He was cashiered. He was given a choice to get his ass out of the Army, retire with full benefits after the military put him on, it wasn't quite a court-martial, one step down for his violent behavior against unarmed, helpless detainees in Iraq. This guy is a sadist. You can tell just by the way he talks. he's inviting people who have political opposition to him. First of all, he lies about their identity, about what he sees as the reason he invites them to get out of the United States. What do you want, Alan? You want a slave colony here? Is that what you want? Punk. So, you know, Alan still has a lot of unresolved issues, apparently, from his time as a torturer in Iraq. And I guess the Caucasians who sit around and listen to people like Alan West really like it. They love to hear Alan West bust up on those white liberals, the Caucasoids down in West Palm Beach, the Palm Beach County Republican Caucasoid Club. Y'all just love that, don't you, huh? Get you a new house Negro. Put him up there and let him start busting up on liberals and white folk. And you love that, don't you, huh? Well, Obama's, you know, half Caucasoid himself, right? Jesus, what a sick place we live in. I don't know how you and I retain our sanity, Truth Seeker. I don't. But anyway, Alan West, another in the clown show, as the Republican Party rips its own guts out this year. And you Democrats are next. Keeping on the lighthearted tone of Republican lawmakers in D.C., they've got a plan now. John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, says he is going to, he and his posse in the House of Representatives are going to try to force the Obama administration to approve the Keystone XL pipeline. Obama, as you probably know, earlier in the month, this month, denied TransCanada's application for this pipeline. He said there was a he was given a 60-day window set by Congress, so he said, "To hell with it." Well, that, you know, that's I know. Just hold on. He said there was no time to review an alternative route because the route of the pipeline goes through very eco-sensitive areas, like anywhere on Earth. But anyway, so he just, you know, he said no for now. Now, I understand. I get it. Don't worry. Obama's not going to say a permanent no to the pipeline. But what really irritates the hell out of me is the way John Boehner, you know, rises himself up off his bed of wine bottles and lifts his head up and says, "Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do. They're going to attach it to a highway bill that Congress will consider next month. That's what we're going to do. Where's my goddamn tanning booth? What time is it? Is it 5 o'clock anywhere? There's got to be 5. What happened? Gabby Giffords retired? Republicans have, ever since Obama said, "Not now, maybe later, dear, but not now." Ever since, Republicans have been looking for a vehicle to resurrect the project. And Boehner said it will be a House Republican Energy and Highway Bill. We're going to do this. We're gonna put it on the highway bill, because this is all about highways. Boehner was on ABC's This Week news program, and he said, "If this Keystone XL is not enacted before we take up the American Energy and Infrastructure Jobs Act, we'll be part of it." No, I don't know what he said either, but it's just, doesn't it make you want to grate your teeth? Republicans in the Senate also plan to introduce a Keystone bill. And this is really something, isn't it? Oh, and some Senate Democrats backed the pipeline, of course. These people don't care. This is why the entire structure has to be brought down. It has to be dismantled, just brought down, like one of those games where you pull out the little pieces of wood and Django, is that Jenga? You pull out little pieces of wood until eventually the whole damn thing collapses.
And I look down the bar at the bartender. I say, "Hey, what do you want? One burger, one cock, and one beer. Well, my baby, she's gone tonight. I ain't seen my baby since night of full last. I wanna get drunk and get off of my mind. Oh, one burger, one cock, and one beer."
And now, a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy. Don't you dare to try and stop us. No one could for long.
Searchlight on my trail. Tonight's the night. 21 past the hour. Hey, let me tell you something. Goldorama.com is a company run by progressives who happen to be friends of mine. I don't know why I keep saying that. I guess it's irritating, right?
Happen to be good friends of mine.
Well, they are. Goldorama.com. They recycle your old gold and silver jewelry and send you the check. So, no, don't buy gold. What are you going to do with it? Eat it? Get rid of what little pieces and chunks you have laying around the house and convert it into something you can use, like food, canned goods, drinking water, I don't know. But do visit Goldorama.com to cash in. Goldorama, yep, just like it sounds, Goldorama.com. Or you can call them, 888-669-5739. Call them now. Or go to their website, Goldorama.com. This next little item I've got here should probably be reserved for Wednesday, which is church night here on the Molloy program. But I saw this at TV News Lies. I subscribe to their daily rundown. You get it in the morning. A whole list of stories, articles that are going to be making news that day. You ought to subscribe if you're not already. You ought to get on their list. TVNewsLies.com. Is it .com? TVNewsLies.com? Yeah. Or .org? Oh, hell, it doesn't matter. TV News Lies. Check them out. So I get this morning about, it's a link to the Daily Mail of the UK. And it's org, tvnewslies.org, org, tvnewslies.org. Go there. Don't go to .com. Oh, you may get redirected. I don't know. Go to tvnewslies.org. But anyway, either Jesse or Reg or somebody put this little comment up regarding the story. Religion alone stands as a perfect example of just how stupid human beings are. There's no limit to the silliness and absurdity that is religion, yet the majority of the world believes in this nonsense. What flavor idiocy is the only thing that separates the idiots? You know, the different... I couldn't put it better, Jesse, if you wrote that. But anyway, here's the story. Mitt Romney's family baptized Ann Romney's atheist father into the Mormon church a year after his death. This is the thing about the Mormons that I just love. It doesn't make any difference. They've taken this whole thing of being washed in the blood of the Lamb one step further. They can go back, like they could go back to my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather and baptize him into the Mormon faith. Right? Now, of course, they don't have to check with me. They don't have to check with any of the other descendants. They can just go back, find out what his name was, and then baptize him into. They've done this to a lot of Jews, and the Jews are very pissed off, and rightly so. I mean, who wouldn't be? Religion is such a joke anyway. But anyway, the Daily Mail of the UK says more questions are being raised about presidential candidate Mitt Romney's religion after it was revealed that he helped baptize his adamantly atheist father-in-law years after the man died. Edward Roderick Davies, that was Ann Romney's father. And he died in 1992. After his entire life, he lived as a staunch atheist. You know, take your religion and stick it where the sun don't shine, was his attitude. Bless his heart. Recently discovered records, however, show that in keeping with their controversial tradition of posthumously baptizing non-Mormons, a ceremony was held to invite Mr. Davies into the Church of Latter-day Saints 1 year after he died. Hello? Are you still dead? Listen, you want to become a Mormon? God! Now, Anne herself, she was converted when she was a teenager. Mitt Romney's father, George, you know, the guy that was brainwashed in Vietnam and the head of American Motors and the governor of Michigan, you know. Now, this practice of performing baptisms on the dead has, as could be expected, has gotten a lot of criticism after the Mormon Church began doing it for well-known Catholics, including former popes. They were baptizing into the Mormon faith, and Jews, including Holocaust survivors. I mean, it's like grave robbing, isn't it? Isn't this like, when was it? Saturday night, Kathy, we watched on Turner Classic Movies, we watched the original Frankenstein from 1931, I believe. The original with Boris Karloff, the original Frankenstein. And the way the movie opens, there's a burial going on in a cemetery. And after the mourners and the gravediggers leave, then Dr. Frankenstein and his assistant descend onto the grave and start digging! and digging, and they get the corpse out. This is what the Mormon church does. After somebody is dead, they go poking around, metaphorically, but it's still the same. Matter of fact, it's even worse. They go poking around in the spiritual collapse of this person and say, oh, a Jew? Let's convert him. Oh, a Catholic? Let's convert. Oh, a Buddhist? Let's convert. Oh, this is so much fun.
Oh, no, I'm sad. Set it up. That's me in the corner. That's me in the spotlight. Losing my religion. Trying to keep up you. And I don't know if I can do it. Oh no.
Ready for Radical Talk Radio? It's Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. So this Mormon thing about baptizing people after they're dead. It kind of eliminates any chance of protest, doesn't it? Huh? I don't want to be shh, quiet. You're dead. But I don't want to be baptized a Mormon. Shh, quiet. According to the religion's official website, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, The baptisms are seen, you see, as a way to offer these souls an option of joining the church, even after they've died. Hi, would you like to join the church? No! You're going to anyway. Shh. You're dead. Shh. A key point is that to the Mormons, it is seen as an option. You see, the dead souls have the ability to either accept or reject the baptism. What do you do? Do you kick over the water? I mean, if you're dead, how do they know? Do some of these Mormon priests? I mean, is this not insanity? I mean, is this not just flat out madness? And it's no different from any other religion. You know, the Catholics believe that when you take communion, you all of a sudden become a cannibal. You're eating human flesh. Oh, but Mike, that's what the word means. Communion. I mean, this is so sick. It's so sick. Oh, well. I just thought I would toss that in. Anne's brother Roderick is quoted as saying that their father, the one that was converted after he was dead into Mormonism, that her father believed that people who were religious were weak in the knees. There's an old expression. And the father, the one that got, you know, shh, we're going to convert you. No! Quiet, you're dead. He considered organized religion, his words, drudgery and hogwash. Oh, my goodness. And, well, you know, on the outside chance, it's not going to happen, but on the outside chance that Romney or any Mormon is elected president of the United States, well, just think, when they get us involved in wars, as the dead military personnel come home, there can be a convocation waiting on the tarmac of Mormon priests or whatever they're called to convert them to Mormonism. It's sick. It's just sick. This is sicker. The U.S. military plans. I mentioned this last week, but I didn't have the story right in front of me. Reported by CBSNews.com, the U.S. military is planning a floating base in the Mideast. Floating. Uh-huh. The Pentagon is preparing to bring a decommissioned assault ship back into duty. excuse me. This plan was first reported in the Washington Post. It would create a floating base for commando teams who, you know, might be deployed against Somali pirates and other threats. Somali pirates. That's, oh yeah, everybody's against Somali pirates. I am. And other threats. Well, what would that be, other threats? Well, you know. CBS News says this action is also a possible countermove for Iran's continued threats to shut down the Strait of Hormuz. Boom. This decommissioned, recommissioned amphibious ship, the name of it is the Ponce, will be used as the mothership. It is expected to be ready to head to the area by June 1. Well, there you go. A floating base of commandos who can respond to piracy by the Somalis and other things. What do you suppose the other things might be? Now, Iran is, and you can't blame the country, I guess, Iran, in this geopolitical game of chicken that adults seem so willing to play. I don't care if they're American or Brits or Russian or Chinese or Iranian or Venezuelan or whatever. You know, this game just goes on, doesn't it? All the energy, all the time, all the just everything that is whirred into this blender of distrust and mistrust, and this is mine, and you can't have it, but I want it because I've got bigger guns. No, yes, no, yes! It just doesn't stop. So Iran says, okay, if you're going to put sanctions against us and freeze all our billions in bank accounts around the globe, I'll tell you what we're going to do to you. We may halt oil exports to Europe. How's that? You're going to take our money? We're not going to give you any more oil, you rat bastards. Oh, my God. From Reuters, the Tehran government, grappling with its own economic crisis under Western trade and banking embargoes, will host a rare visit by UN nuclear inspectors for talks that the ruling clergy may hope can relieve diplomatic pressure as they struggle to bolster public support. Da-dun-dun-dun-dun, da-dun-dun, da-dun-dun. For all the tension, there was little clear market response to Friday's talk by members of Iran's parliament that they may vote on Sunday to stop sending oil to the European Union as early as next week. And see, the ripple effect, Greek and Italian refineries rely on Iranian crude to refine and turn into all those earth-destroying petroleum products that then goes north from Greece and Italy. Now, you know that Greece and Italy are on the verge of, especially Greece, a financial collapse because the predatory capitalists want it to collapse so they can go in and buy the Parthenon, I guess, for $1.98 or 10 euros or whatever the hell it is. You know, really and truly, we talked about this a week or so ago, the Greeks ought to just turn and face north and face west to the bankers in Europe and the United States, and just give them the finger. Really, just give them the finger. Just say, yeah, get out of town. Get off our islands. Get out of here. We invented you pricks. And boy, do we regret it. Get out of here. Take your scummy, filthy capitalism and go away. But no, that's what they ought to do. And the Italians? what a mess. The Italians are just insane, and I can say that. They're just crazy. But the recession hit Greeks. They bought more than half their oil from Iran lately. And because Iranians, I don't know, maybe they like the Greeks. I have no idea. Maybe the Greeks aren't threatening them. But all of a sudden, they're going to say, okay, no more oil. Now the oil or the petroleum traders, the ones who really make the money, are getting tired of all this. The rhetorical thrust in Perry, as Reuters puts it. One Mediterranean crude oil trader said of remarks by Iranian lawmakers on Friday, quote, they are masters of bluffing, and they aren't very reliable when they threaten extreme measures. Oil is, what is it, $1.11 on the open market? Is that what it is? Or are those futures? I don't know. I really don't care. Ba-dum-ba-dum-bum-bum-bum. So we're going to send a floating military base into the Persian Gulf, apparently. All chock-a-block with commandos and SEAL Team 6 and other people who can rapidly respond to anything that might develop there. And the Iranians are going to respond by saying, okay, we're going to convert all of you to Mormonism. Oh, no, wait, that's Mitt Romney's family. No, the Iranians say, okay, you go ahead and do that, and we're just going to stop sending you oil. Put that in your pipe and smoke it, huh? And so the big, you know, the great game between the capitalist freaks just goes on. In the meantime, the planet is just saying, please stop, please stop.
Hello, my name is Elder Smith. And can I leave this book with you for you to just peruse?
Hello!
Hello!
I'll just leave it here. It has a lot of information you can really use. Hello.
Hi.
My name is
Jesus Christ.
You have a lovely home. It's an amazing book.
Bonjour!
Hey, how?
Are these your kids?
This book gives you the secret to eternal life.
Sound good?
Eternal life.
With Jesus Christ.
It's super fun. We'll show you how it can be done.
Thank you, sure.
Well, that's fine.
Goodbye.
Have fun in hell.
Hey,
you simply won't believe how much it's worth. This book will change your mind.
Change your life.
This book will change your life.
I'd go anywhere to fight for us, be it olive, sapphire, or crude. For cooking, for cars, take a rocket to the stars for a back rub, romantic rendezvous. In your engine, on your face, or almost any place, a little dab of oil will get you through. Oh, I go anywhere to fight for oil, to lubricate the red, white, and blue.
Yes.
For a place to attack.
I'd go anywhere to fight for oil to lubricate the red, white, and blue. Oh, God. We can blow up a country, too. I don't know. It's just... listen, we all have... those of us who still retain shreds of rationality, we have been decrying, isn't that the word you see in the paper all the time? Decrying the Citizens United ruling from, how long has it been? Last year? 2 years ago? 2 years ago. And Antonin Fat Tony Scalia, the mafia member of the U.S. Supreme Court, arguably cast the deciding vote of the five votes that were necessary in unleashing unlimited and in so many cases unknown corporate money into the American political system to absolutely further destroy it completely. Watching the candidate from Israel, Newt Gingrich, and the candidate from a religious organization that believes in baptizing dead people, watching them, these two slug it out and spend millions, you understand the damage, or you should understand the damage done by Citizens United. That ruling. But at a panel in South Carolina last weekend, not this one just passed, but weekend before, Fat Tony tried to lay the blame for the campaign finance fury that he unleashed, he created, at everyone's feet but his own. This is from a report from there. Quote, super PACs have raised more than $30 million. Just three races into the 2012 presidential race, according to the website OpenSecrets.org, run by the Center for Responsive Politics. TV advertising alone, prior to the South Carolina primary, was estimated to be $15 million. Fat Tony Scalia said the blame for this type of system shouldn't fall on the Supreme Court, which he said merely decides whether the system is legal under the U.S. Constitution. Instead, Fat Tony said the ones who have to change things are the politicians who created the system and the voters who often reward the candidates who spend the most money. Scalia said, quote, it's the system. If it seems crazy to you, don't blame it on the court. What? What do you want? What do you think I'm doing up here? Right? It's your fault. Jesus. Scalia's attempt, of course, to shift the blame is stupid, ridiculous, and I'm embarrassed to be an Italian-American. Fat Tony embarrasses me. He really does. What is wrong with you? That's right. He's an Opus Dei Catholic, so that's even worse. Wait till the Catholics decide they can baptize you after you're dead. Then you'll have dead Catholics and dead Mormons competing to, you know, shh, you're dead. Don't touch me. You're dead. Be quiet. And as it says here, while America's pre-Citizens United campaign finance laws were far from perfect, they were at least adequate to prevent a handful of corporations from buying and selling elections. Congress did pass a ban on corporate money 65 years ago. But Tony, Fat Tony Scalia, and the other black-robed fascists who voted to unleash this tidal wave of destruction killed that ban. And if it wasn't for the Supreme Court, the ban would still be in place. But it's Fat Tony who says, hey, what? What you talking about? Eh? What do you mean, me? I didn't do nothing. I didn't do nothing here. You pass a law. They did pass a law. All right. So? So you ruled that corporations are people in this regard. Jesus God. The Citizens United not only opened the floodgates, so to speak, for corporate money, it also led to the creation of these super PACs, which allow wealthy individuals like, what's his name? Sheldon Adelman from Nevada to attempt to get elected the candidate from Israel, Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich, who declares, you know, and after all, Newt Gingrich is a historian. He declares that there is no such thing as a Palestinian people. If there is no such thing as a Palestinian people, there's no such thing as Palestine. Every once in a while I bring this up, I get an email from some freak who says, show me Palestine on a map. It never existed. Oh, okay. All right. Go back to sleep now. Pretty soon the Mormons will come for you. The super PACs, which allow wealthy individuals to spend unlimited sums of money on shadow campaigns intended to elect particular candidates. That's what the super PACs do. And shortly after that ruling that Fat Tony Scalia now wants to say is not my fault, shortly after that was handed down, a key lower court decision used it to declare so-called independent expenditures a free-for-all for the very wealthy. Now, billionaires are still forbidden from giving unlimited money to a campaign, but donations to so-called independent groups like Newt Gingrich or Mitt Romney's super PACs are entirely unbound
And Fat Tony! Fat Tony Scalia! What? What? What do you want from me? Eh? What do you want? I gotta go. I'm going to communion. I'm gonna eat some flesh and drink some blood, all right? All right. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.